Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour tout le monde. Je vous souhaite la bienvenue ici au Ritz et parmi nous. Ça me fait un grand plaisir de vous accueillir. Je suis Lily de Grandpré. Je suis maintenant gouverneure émérite de l'Université McGill parce que j'ai fait partie du conseil pendant plusieurs années. Dans mes dernières années, j'étais la vice-présidente du conseil des gouverneurs à McGill. Alors, c'est un grand plaisir pour moi de vous accueillir. Et puis, je vois que Madeleine va être est populaire parce qu'on a Sable Combs aujourd'hui. Et puis, d'après ce que je comprends, notre lunch est encore meilleur que celui qui est à Toronto. Alors. Our proceedings are going to be live-streamed today. And so it's a warm welcome to those who are going to join us. And we also have Twitter, and that's the Twitter. It's hashtag MCGillWLP, Women's Leadership Program or something like that. Anyway, WLP. So this is our Twitter handle for those of you who want to send messages as Madeleine and Maryse are going to speak. We started this initiative of Women in Leadership and Philanthropy a few years ago at McGill with a group of people who were interested in promoting the role of women, not only at McGill, but also in their business community. And we've held a number of events in Toronto, in New York. We've had also one in Calgary. The last one was a conversation with Katie Taylor, who's chair of the board of the RBC, and that was in Toronto. So we're very active. And one of the things we're going to do at the end of our session is we're going to send you a bit of a survey to see how you feel about that, what type of events you'd like to have, to make sure that we continue to hold these events and that they answer your needs and what you think is more important to advance your career. So we're also on LinkedIn, and on LinkedIn we now have 450 people, and I invite most of you must be on LinkedIn. And so if you go there, and we'll send you the link later with your name when you're registered, so you'll be able to join if you haven't already do so. Alors, nous, le but de l'initiative, comme je disais tout à l'heure, c'est vraiment d'offrir à toutes les femmes de s'épanouir, d'atteindre leur plein potentiel au niveau professionnel. Et on est chanceux parce qu'à McGill, on a maintenant notre deuxième principale et vice-chancelière. On a eu Heather Monroe Broom pendant 10 ans qui a fait un travail extraordinaire. Et maintenant, c'est Suzanne Fortier qui est une alum. Elle est cristallographe. Donc, c'est une femme qui est dans le domaine scientifique. Et comme on en a beaucoup, on est bien fiers d'elle. Et récemment, Suzanne a fait une présentation à la Chambre de commerce où elle a expliqué sa vision de l'avenir de McGill et comment elle entrevoit les principales réalisations de son mandat. And in particular, she said that she wants McGill to ensure that it's a university with a clear sense of purpose, because what we do, which is learning, using, and advancing knowledge, exploring new paths in knowledge, has never mattered more than to our community and our world. So you can see the full address of Suzanne on our website, and I strongly encourage you. She's a woman of vision, a very, very lovely woman. What she loves to do the best is to stroll the campus and talk to students, which are the heart of her mission. So I'd like to now introduce the two people who will be part of your luncheon today. The person who is going to be the moderator of the event is Maryse Bertrand, who's Vice President and General Counsel at CBC Radio-Canada, and she's responsible for real estate, legal, corporate secretary services, and she chairs the National Crisis Management Committee of CBC Radio-Canada. Were you in Moncton yesterday? Yeah. She's also a member of the Quebec Bar, which awarded her a distinction of, they say advocatus emeritus, but isn't it advocata emerita? Possibly. Yeah. In recognition of her exceptional contribution to the legal profession, she's also a member of the Canadian Bar and the American Bar Associations. She sits on the board of the National Bank of Canada, and she chairs the board of director of ARTV, which is a cultural specialty channel. She graduated from McGill Law School, and she served on the advisory board of that faculty for over 10 years. And I can tell you that Danielle Jutras, the dean, certainly appreciates her contribution. So we are very pleased that she has agreed to be the moderator of the event today. And our special guest is Madeleine Paquin. Madeleine est présidente et CEO de Logistec, une compagnie qui se spécialise dans les services de transport maritime et de l'environnement. C'est une compagnie qui a été fondée par son père Roger, mais Madeleine l'a amenée à de nouveaux sommets. Alors, on est absolument enchantés qu'elle se joigne à nous. Logistec est présent dans 25 ports en Amérique du Nord et c'est une compagnie qui, je pense, normalement, on devrait dire, c'est plutôt réservé à un secteur. Les gens, les stevedores puis tous ces gens-là, c'est plutôt des hommes qui œuvrent dans le milieu. Alors, on est enchantés que Madeleine soit avec nous aujourd'hui pour représenter ce milieu-là. She's one of the leading female executives in Canada, and she's a board member of a number of blue chips companies and organizations. She's chaired the St. Lawrence Great Lakes Trade Gateway Leadership Council. She's on the board of directors of the Chambre du commerce de Montréal métropolitain. And in 1999, she was named number one of 100 of top women entrepreneurs by the Canadian Business Profit magazine in Châtelaine, and she's one of that group every year since then. And from 2003 to 2006, she was amongst the winners of Canada Most Powerful Woman, the top 100 awards for WXN, and she has been inducted in its Hall of Fame. She's a graduate of Richard Ivey School, we won't hold that against her, and l'École des hautes études commerciales, but she's a good friend of McGill, and we're absolutely delighted that she accepted our invitation, because one of the key things when I was talking to Suzanne Fortier, our principal, about our initiative, and we want to create something even bigger than what we have now, and I'll have to tell you more at the next event, one of her first questions was, is this reserved for McGill graduates? And I said, absolutely not. Our role is to really help women achieve their full potential in their professional and personal lives. So, vous êtes toutes les bienvenues. Puis on a même quelques hommes. On va leur souhaiter la bienvenue quand même. Alors, merci. Alors, Maryse, Madeleine, si vous voulez monter sur le podium.
Thing I didn't wear. Skirt suit.
Yes. Hey, skirts, mind you, in this audience would have been fine. Alan and Willem would like. Our two token men. Oh, and Pierre, my friend.
Alors, Madeleine, bienvenue. Thank you for agreeing to do this, by the way. I mean, female CEOs are, don't want to say a dime a dozen because they're actually quite rare birds, but female CEOs of your age, in your industry, with your accomplishments, they're really, really quite exceptional and quite rare. We want to know what your secret is, and we want to know if we can bottle it and then sell it and make a fortune with it. So, first things first. Lily described some of your many accomplishments, but can you share with us the path that you took to become president of Logistec and CEO of Logistec?
Okay, well, I guess, you know, it started with having great parents that had strong values and going to good schools, good universities. I think education is key, and I see here the head of the study school that I met over the years. So definitely education is something that I would promote highly. It certainly gives you the tools to be able to succeed, and it gives you the confidence, too, that analytically you can get to the right decision. So having said that, I started my career in Toronto as a sales rep for one of the divisions of the company that is owned by our family to a large extent. And I guess, I don't know, maybe my dad figured if I'm going to do mistakes, I better do them elsewhere. But anyhow, so I had a great year in Toronto where I got to know a lot of the customers and started building up a network and realized later on how important a network is. Then moved back to Montreal and worked in various positions, but mostly in this agency business, which at the time or a year or so later ended up having some high management issues at the high level. So the president was let go, and somebody came in to fill his place, and you know, all that kind of led to opportunities to make some moves inside the company And so I was not only in sales, I became in charge of all the support services. Next thing you knew, I was, not that I knew, but I was being groomed for that top job. You know, in the end, we just built a great team, and the dynamics were great. I was selling our company to serve to customers all over the world, so lots of traveling involved, and we were extremely successful to bring in new customers. And next thing you know, the president that was there retired, and I took his place, and that was 4 years after I started. So needless to say, it was moving pretty fast. But you know, when you're young and bold and energetic, I was consumed by the work, and I just adored the job, adored the company. So obviously that passion and energy just was, you know, filtered through the organization, and we did some great things. And then at one point my dad got very sick, and that was a very kind of emotional moment for me. But what was most important is that the last thing I wanted to do was for him to get any of the problems of the company. It was a very hard company to manage, very marginal in terms of profitability. But it was really a company that could have lots of headaches because there was a lot of moving parts. And I just, you know, worked my damnest just to make sure that no problems went to him. And I think that was probably another reason that propelled me to work even harder. So I didn't have much life other than work back then, but I have certainly no regrets.
So you've described your parcours. Obviously, a lot of challenges along the way, including your dad's illness. Is there something that stands out that sort of for you brought you from one level to the next? Is there a particular event or circumstance that really helped mm-hmm. you develop as a leader?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, that company was a pretty hard business to manage. And we had grown it successfully, so I was accumulating the package of successes little by little. But I would say the highlight was when I had been traveling to India quite often, and I had met some Americans there because together we became the North American agents for this shipping company that would you know, have ships coming to Canada that would be trading towards India. And I had developed a pretty good relationship with these guys, and at one point they approached me and said, "We have an opportunity to get a Japanese customer and merge our two companies across Canada." And that meant really doubling our revenues. It also meant we had to go sell to the Japanese, that this project was really in win-win-win for all three parties. And we successfully did that. And then, you know, once you win, it's one thing. Then you better execute properly mm-hmm. because everybody's watching you, and you know, you just can't leave any stones unturned. So worked very hard to try and put these, in fact, three companies together across Canada. And I would say that was a real mark of success. And that was when I was asked if I should, you know, now go to Logistec, and you know, and I said, well, I really love this business and I don't want to let it go, but I knew deep down that I had to move on. And the business was very difficult, and in the end I became president of Logistec and 2 years later sold that business. It was just too tough. So then focused on Logistec, and then Logistec, you know, today is Marcel Côté's funeral. One of the first people that I brought in from the outside was Marcel to try and, you know, he was known as the expert in strategy. He came in and helped us out, and really he was the one that helped me build my first plan for Logistec, and we executed and we built, and here we are.
Not bad at all. You talked about dealing with the, first of all, we'll talk about the industry in a moment, because it is an industry that's not, as Lily said, known for the way women are perceived in that industry. So there's a bit of a challenge there, I'm sure. You talked about dealing with the Japanese. I'm sure culturally that must have been a challenge. What about the challenge of attending the golf event at the Port of Montreal and being the first woman ever invited to that golf event? Why don't you share that story with the rest of us?
Okay. My close friends probably know that story. But yes, very male-dominated industry that I was in. I'm still in, but less male-dominated. But back then, the Port of Montreal held an exclusive golf tournament once a year, and all the presidents of the industry were invited. And so when I became president of March Shipping, which is the agency business, I managed to get on that list. And it was a little awkward because I was the only woman. That golf tournament, it was a shotgun, and that golf tournament had two very small showers, and the two showers were in the past used by the men. So needless to say, there was going to be a waiting line there. So the VP marketing, who now works for me, at the time he was working for the port, diplomatically phoned me and asked me if, you know, it's a little awkward and stuff, but do I mind if they get a hotel room somewhere and I can, you know, use that hotel room to change and come back to the dinner? And I said, I have no problems with that. And if you want, I can even, you know, shower quickly and then you can open it up to the guys. I have zero issues with that. And then there was no conversation for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then I go to the golf tournament and I have the ladies' locker room to myself. I said, okay, I don't know what happened between here and there, but... So needless to say, the men's waiting list, waiting line was really long, and as anticipated. And so everybody was complaining at how long, why this year, why is it taking so long for us to be able to get in the showers?
Bring it.
So that was my one of my, I guess, coming out. in the industry, but you know, I have to say it's more of a joke now, but you know, I was very well received. It was funny. Yes, I was the talk of the day, but you know, it wasn't long after that many of these people became friends. So
there was no resentment with your hogging the shower all to yourself.
No, but in the end it was a legal reason. Apparently you can't have a golf course without and ladies on the golf course
female
without giving them at least a bathroom.
Absolutely. So speaking about being a woman in that industry and being surrounded with male counterparts, did you develop a leadership style that was different than the role models possibly that you had around you? How would you describe your leadership style?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind was, I guess, my father, who was obviously very determined, very persistent, had built the business. He obviously knew all the ropes, had all the answers. I came in, didn't know much, so I had a lot of listening to do. I had a lot of dialoguing to do with the key managers there. So, in essence, it starts for me by being more a listener. I wasn't, you know, my dad made decisions like this, and he didn't care who was involved in the decision-making or not. And I would say I'm probably the opposite. So you learn about what all the issues are, and then you work with your team towards making the best decision. And that's an easy way to get them on board, too. So I'm a more... I guess you could say collaborative. Mm-hmm. In time, you know, you learn how to be more efficient with that. But I would say that, you know, I'm a more collaborative leader than a dictatorial leader. I guess it's more modern too.
And do you have a particular role model or somebody that was very instrumental in helping shape your management style?
I don't really have a mentor. I would say that, you know, as you evolve through life, you meet people that you like and you see things that you like and you build who you are with what you learn with people around you. So I would say I'm more like looking at that question more towards, you know, the companies that have been models for me. You know, how have they built their business and how can we learn from it? And, you know, yes, you can have some inspirational leaders, but I wouldn't pinpoint one. I would say there's been a bunch of people that have helped me through my career that have helped me develop the person that I am. But, equally important is the learnings through experiences with companies and even customers. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you were talking as we were preparing how important relationships are and the people skills and having the ability to, I guess, draw out people. So I presume that you've put that to
Yeah, I love that book. What is it, Good to Great, where you take the best resources and work on them and build on them. And if somebody is weak at something, you recognize it, but you really work on strengths.
So. Yes, Sun Tzu, The Art of War, actually. Work on your strengths. As I was doing some research for this, I looked at, out of curiosity, you became the CEO of Logistec in 1996, so I went back and I looked at what the revenues were in 1995. They were $86 million. And last year, you had revenues of over $300 million, so quite the progression over time. So do you think that there are leadership qualities that are essential or personal traits that are essential to achieving that kind of success, generally?
Obviously, there have to be. If I think back, I'm more a person that thinks about my company than thinks about me. But I would say useful skills or necessary skills would be, first and foremost, you got to have integrity. You got to have people skills because you're always working with people. There's not much that gets done alone. So you have to be able to build your team. You have to be sales oriented. You've got to be able to see customers, try and understand what they're looking for, what you can deliver, not deliver. You've got to be determined. You've got to be focused, and you've got to work hard. Wow. That you can never underestimate.
All right. We talked about Logistec and the industry, so maybe we can talk about whether there were specific challenges about not only being in that industry, but also this was a family company, but it was a public company. You had public shareholders that you were answerable to, and you work in the business with your sisters. So are there any challenges associated with, you know, managing that that line between the family business and the public company and having family in the business working with you?
When I came on board at Logistec, the company was already public. And I think that speaks a lot for the governance structure around the way things are done. We have an outside board, which is majority, non-employee, non-family members. And so I think that's really important to just make sure that the governance is good. Both my sisters work with me, and I would say both are my best allies. One of them runs our shipping business to the Arctic, and the other one works in our information department. Basically, she's chief information officer, and she's very process-oriented. And you know what? She wouldn't want my job anyways. But so I would say my two sisters are my greatest allies, along with a great team of employees that have grown with me over the years.
So you've managed to keep the relationship with your sisters, notwithstanding that, in fact, you're boss.
I think when it comes to the business, what's more important is the success of the business. And what roles we can each contribute are important, but it's important that this be run as a professional organization.
And they understand
that. And of course they understand that. We were always brought up with those kinds of values. That's intrinsic in who you are, I think.
And in terms of the vision for the business, is that something that you would discuss with them specifically, or is just part of the process at work, or Do you share any of your ideas or thoughts with them in a sort of specific way, or not in any different way than you would do with the rest of your team?
Not really differently from the rest of the team. I would say that they are on the team. So, you know, when we have discussion and brainstorming, they're a party to that. And they're strong characters like me, so they don't have a problem getting their thoughts
their
out
point
on
of
the
view
table.
Across. Or to be a fly on the wall on those meetings. So you've worked under a lot of pressure. This is a high-pressure environment. You have responsibilities to your employees, your clients, your shareholders. You also have a private life. You have two teenage daughters. That in and of itself may be a challenge, perhaps even greater than the professional challenges. So how do you manage the famous Work-Life Balance Act? Question that everybody here, I'm sure, is wondering about.
You know what? There's no magic formula. You have to know what your priorities are. My priorities were always my girls, obviously. Obviously I didn't have as much time as maybe a stay-at-home mom with their kids, but whenever I was with them, it was quality time. I certainly didn't, as much as some friends and my husband would have liked, I didn't play golf on weekends while they were young. It was bad enough that I didn't see them during the week, so weekends were around them. Of course, I had a nanny, and I was privileged to be able to afford a nanny, but the nanny was for me. So I could spend the time with my kids, and that's psychologically extremely important to differentiate between having a nanny to take care of your kids and having a nanny to just do all the stuff that will liberate you so you can be with your kids. So, you learn the tricks as you go along. I have two beautiful girls today, and they're both doing really well in school and, ambitious. And you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with a working mom. It was hard the first few years when, they're hanging onto your legs and you're having to run and having to travel, but one day at a time you get through those years, and I think later on they learn to appreciate that you've done a career and you've raised them, and now they're both wanting to be career girls. So that's okay.
I was going to ask you, are they going to follow in our mother's footsteps, do you think, or they're still in high school?
I'm quite sure that they will both develop businesses. Whether it will be within Logistec, I don't know. But they're both aiming for business careers. And one is in Boston at Babson College, which is a school that specializes in entrepreneurship. So, of course, but she wants to do something meaningful. So I'm going to have to convince her that the services at Logistec are meaningful. And I would have loved to have them here today, but there's a ceremony at LCC, and one sister is giving the tie to the other sister, so they couldn't be here.
Well, they'll be able to watch you on...
They'll be able to watch, okay. Oh, yes, we are on camera.
On the video.
Don't remind me.
So how do you disconnect? How do you relax? How do you get away from it all and de-stress? Or are you on all the time?
No, I try not to be on all the time. When I go home sometimes at night, I'm like, okay, gotta stop. Have a nice little glass of wine. But I would say, sports is important. Balance, I like to play golf, I like to ski. I think it's important to, spend some time outdoors and lead a somewhat balanced life. And psychologically, I think it's important not to let things get to you. Yes, we're all working hard, but one day at a time. You can't do everything. And, I learned the hard way at some point. I was doing so much. When you're young, the first thing I always say is, grab your opportunities and make sure that you succeed at everything you do. But when that basket of opportunities gets huge, you have to think that, what's this going to do on my body, And I actually, at one point, did get sick. And I had to take a couple of months off work and hospital, no hospital. And anyways, needless to say, it was a lesson. But I had probably 10 boards, two kids under 10, and a full-time job at Logistec, which we were building. And so needless to say, we're only human.
That sounds like a pretty full schedule to me. I think we have time for One more question before we're going to open up to the floor for questions for Madeleine. And this one maybe we'll do in French, Madeleine. Je regardais la liste des nombreux conseils d'administration passés, présents, sur lesquels tu as siégé, le Sun Life Financial, Sun Life Assurance, le Canadian Pacific, les HSC, Aéroports de Montréal, Ivy School of Business, le Board of Trade, the Children's Hospital, le Study, le Forum Maritime, le YMCA, puis toutes les autres organisations professionnelles. En fait, attendez un instant, il faut que je vous lise ça parce que c'est incroyable. Dans le petit discours que tu as prononcé en 2007, tu les as énumérés d'ailleurs, parce que j'ai pas réussi à trouver une biographie aussi exhaustive que celle-ci. Alors, the boards of CP Rail, Sun Life Financial, the Airport of Montreal, Forum Maritime du Québec, the National Marine and Industrial Council, the Conference Board, Chambre de Commerce du Québec, Ivy Advisory Board, the Study School, Montreal Children's Hospital, the YMCA. Alors, j'étais épuisée seulement à lire la liste. Qu'est-ce que quand même, faire sa part, ta participation à un moment ou à un autre sur ces conseils-là ou sur ces organismes publics, qu'est-ce que ça t'a apporté quand même? Est-ce que c'était des opportunités? Tu disais que tu les saisissais toutes, que c'était dans le but sûrement d'en tirer quelque chose.
J'ai appris parce que j'ai un peu honte de toute la liste. Puis c'est pas surprenant que je suis devenue, j'ai tombé malade, mais bien évidemment, quand on prend des opportunités de même, tu sais, j'avais, je pense, 30 ans et on m'a demandé d'être sur le conseil de Sun Life. C'est difficile de dire non. C'est, tu sais, un blue chip. Quelle belle opportunité. Alors, mais tu sais, au bout de la ligne, je rajeunissais le board de loin.
De moitié, sûrement.
Mais énorme. C'est une énorme expérience, opportunité d'être capable de le faire, d'être capable d'être assis à l'entour des gens qui sont tellement connaissants, des belles expériences. J'ai passé 12 ans à CP Rail. J'ai travaillé avec des gens comme John Cleghorn qui m'a beaucoup appris, ainsi que tous les autres sur le conseil de CP. On apprend toujours quand on est mis dans un milieu où on connaît moins, mais on apprend des autres. Et le calibre de gens autour de ces tables-là, c'est incroyable. Alors, oui, c'est une belle expérience, mais évidemment, à un moment donné, il faut faire des choix et on peut pas tout faire. Et c'est là que, tu sais, c'est une belle expérience d'apprentissage. À un moment donné, il faut regarder notre bilan de temps et réaliser que le temps, c'est ce qui est le plus précieux et il faut que ça soit équilibré parce que on peut pas juste courir. Il faut qu'on prenne le temps de penser. Alors, puis on peut jamais faire plein de choses bien en même temps. Il y en a trop. Alors, il faut choisir deux, trois choses, puis bien les faire.
Établir ses priorités.
C'est ça.
Alors, je pense qu'on peut l'ouvrir. We can open it up for questions. I think there's a microphone in the middle of the room if anybody wants to ask questions. You may want to stand up, or I can repeat your question if...
What advice do you have from your experience to women immigrants since we are in the country of welcome immigrants? What advice from your experience do you have to women immigrants who are planning to go into sales and marketing to different culture and to kind of information jobs?
I'll repeat the question maybe okay. So everybody understands
okay,
it.
Okay, you need to repeat them because if you don't use the microphone, the people who are in the lecture won't hear you.
So I'll just repeat the question, and then if we could please use the microphone, I guess you're right, Lily, it would be better. So the question is, what advice does Madeleine have for immigrant women who are thinking about, a career in an international career or a career with international business?
Well, the first thing I would say is welcome. We need talent from everywhere, so you took the jump to come to Canada, and I think that's a great decision. Obviously, what you bring is your international knowledge that, is very valuable to share with companies here. So we work with people from all over the world and everybody. You don't want the same people around the table. You want diversity, and I think that's what you would bring to a team. Now, I don't know much more about... who you are or what you like. So But I would say I would say it's a plus for you to be different from the others.
Can you use the mic, or can somebody bring the microphone maybe? No, it's because it's being recorded. So the people who are listening on the live stream, they can't hear what you're saying.
You just take the mic. No, to take the stick.
I just need to ask about your diverse experience. You're as a CEO of a company like Logistech. You work with people from diverse culture. People who are coming new to this diverse culture, what do you advise to people who want to succeed in that, generally, whether we're men or women? What do I need to learn to be able to work in a diverse society with people all over the world from different companies and different cultures?
All you need is a good attitude, energy, and passion for whatever you do. I don't think it's any different from anybody else. I really don't. Honestly, if anything, you bring something added, which is experience from another country, and that's very valuable for companies that want to work internationally. But it's the same positive attitude. I don't know what more to say.
They're universal ingredients, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I'm Nancy Sweer. I'm the head of school at the study, and Madeline has visited us on our career day and has had a huge effect on our girls. And I would like to ask you, when you were a young person, what was it? What were the experiences or perhaps the education that made you realize that as a woman you had a voice? What was it that made you stand up and say, I too can be a female leader?
I never thought about being a female leader, to tell you honestly, because, you know, when you plow through life, you know, a leader is a leader. But I would say from a very young age, I was very competitive. I used to horseback ride, and I loved to win. And I had my dad following me, and you know, he was obviously a huge impact on my life. If I won, he won his bets with his guys, so needless to say, it was a driving force to my energy and wanting to win. But you never think really that you're a woman. It's, you just, you know, a leader is a leader, I think.
Hi, we have a question from Twitter from at Christina Ramsey. She's asking, what is the best business mistake you ever made?
The best business mistake you ever made.
The best or the biggest?
I heard the best.
The best?
Both.
Exactly.
When you learned the most from. You know what? You make mistakes all the time. I try and just forget those and move on. But yeah, making mistakes is probably the best learning experience. But I'm going to get concrete here. I mean, obviously, you know, sometimes you, the biggest mistakes would be mistakes you make on people, you know, people you surround yourself with, and it turns out that they aren't the people that you would have hoped that they were. But to give you something maybe a little bit more concrete business-wise, we had the opportunity to bid on a terminal at some point. And I had my uncle who was working with me, and, you know, he always thought that, you know, I was so driven that at some point we had to just stop, you know, put the price at a certain amount and move on. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But in this one particular case, I really regret not fighting for it more. Because the company that we would have bought for $5 million more, which is peanuts, ended up being one of the most successful companies about 5 or 10 years later. So be it. You know, when you want something, fight for it. Sometimes you have to convince others, but it's worth the energy.
Another question in the back of the room?
My question for you is, since you started your career at such a young age, how did you deal with working with a management team that's mostly dominated by older men, and also just customers and things like that? How did you deal with sort of proving yourself and just proving yourself that you can do the job and you can be successful?
Okay, how to differentiate a young woman who's 22 to 25 years old out in a sea of men that whose equivalent is gray-haired and 60. You know what, when I asked for an appointment with somebody, whether it was in Colombia or Turkey or New York, I think they gave me the time of day that maybe they wouldn't have given them. So that differentiation actually can work for you. But of course, the most important part is not to have access to these people, which is, you know, a good start. But once you get there, don't mess up and make sure you deliver the goods. And so I wouldn't say that there's anything negative about being young. Your competitors are somewhat different profiles because it can certainly work for you.
But the key thing, though, in the end, it opens the door. But
it opens the door, yeah.
Then you still have to prove yourself afterwards, right?
Absolutely. And most of the time when you're proving yourself, it's your team that has to deliver, not just you. So you got to make sure you not only land the fish, but execute to the satisfaction of the customer. Absolutely. More important. Then they keep coming and asking for more, which is all good.
Any other questions?
Somebody in front.
Hello, my name is Angia. First of all, I wanted to congratulate you. It's very, very impressive, your story. My question for you is it important to set goals or like to take a step back and say, what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to be in this time in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Or it's something spontaneous for you? You don't have to overthink and be like, oh, I don't need to take the time and just do what I'm doing because it's natural to me.
Good question. I never really thought of myself and my career. I was working for this company, and my objectives were really for the success in building this company. So my objective, of course, it's important to know where you want to go and to be able to plan how you're going to get there. It wasn't really, I want to be president, so what do I need to do to get there? It was more, what can I do for this company that will allow us to be there tomorrow? And the rest comes naturally. You're not really doing it for yourself. Your focus is on your business. Whatever you're doing, do it really well. And the next steps, I think, will follow.
Somebody there?
I'm a translator, so diverse culture, and I'm also myself an immigrant, so I can relate to a few things. In dealing with other cultures in your international operations, can you explain some of the problems you may have encountered or which culture were the most difficult to deal with?
I have to be diplomatic here.
This is only being put on the internet. No one is going to know about your answer to this question.
Okay, let me try and answer that by which culture is harder. You know what? I think every culture is different, and you have to adapt to the culture that you're dealing with as opposed to the other way around. They won't adapt for you. So you have to understand, why they behave the way they do and plan accordingly. And I'll give you an example. We have a container terminal here in Montreal, and I call it my United Nations, and hopefully my partners aren't going to be listening to that video. But I call it the United Nations because it's a Swiss customer, a Greek, Japanese, American partner, and a Dutch partner, and trying to make decisions with such a diversified group is difficult. So you go to Japan and then you try and understand what makes them click, how do they make decisions, and then you go to Geneva and you have this company run by Italians from Geneva who make decisions like this. And the Japanese who take lots of time to analyze. You wonder how they got so good at making those cars back then. But needless to say, you know, you have people that make decisions quickly, people that take an awful long time to make decisions. What's important is that you work with who they are. And if it takes time, you have to respect it, and you have to just feed them the information that they require, because that's who they are. The people from Geneva, the people from Holland, a little bit micromanagers, they want lots of information. In the end, you know, if we want to move forward, we've just got to be able to adapt and get them on the same page, same vision, same end result. But you just have to respect that they are different and they're allowed to be different. And what is it that makes them click, and how can I figure out how to deliver to them so they can deliver back to me what I need to go forward? Because in the end, we're just wanting to go forward, right? Did I answer your question?
I can understand the diplomatic bit.
Put it this way, there are countries I like to visit more than others. Yes, but probably not right to discuss that.
Give names.
Yeah. No.
We have another question? Yes.
Hi, I'm Adriana Fais. I was just wondering, you said that one of the most important things was the team you surrounded yourself with. So what's like the number one trait you always look for in the people that you actually hire around you?
Good energy, good attitude, loyalty, team player. Geneviève is here, and Geneviève does a lot of the hiring for us at Logistec, so she kind of knows what it is we're looking for, and they do a very good job at it because the team is really strong. And we actually did an exercise a few days ago on a wanted ad, and what would we want? And a lot of what we want are soft skills. We can train them, we can give them the expertise in cargo handling, but you start with a good positive attitude from almost birth, and that's what we're looking for in people, because we want them to stay with us for their whole career, and we want them to be strong team leaders and contribute to the business, and I think everybody wants that. So. Yes.
Oh. Hi, my name's Rebecca. Thank you very much for sharing your insights with us. Question about leadership, and you were mentioning surrounding yourself with the best and brightest people. And as sort of a young manager, a lot of those people you tend to feel maybe better than yourself. And so, you know, women tend to not have that confidence. So how do you sort of find that line at being confident in that you have that leadership to be able to sort of herd these people along and bring them to their best potential, while at the same time feeling, well, you know, these people tend to be better than me. So how do you sort of handle that, those kinds of feelings, if you had them at all?
Don't think about the feelings. Just go. Just work on issues together. Work on where you want to go together. You know, my best people have way better skills than I do at many things. But what's important is that you all work together with a certain objective and a clear path. And, you know, what you can offer and what somebody else can offer are maybe two different things. One person is not better than another, just the skill sets are different, right?
Any more questions?
Hi, my name is Alice. I have a question regarding leadership, and I'm just wondering if you believe leaders, the characteristic of being a good leader, if people are born with it or if people can develop it, and what would be the skills that you can learn to become a better leader?
I think one of the, not skills, traits of a good leader is you have to be confident in where you're going. You have, you know, in a humble way, because if you're too bold about it, I think it can work against you. But you have to know where you want to go, where you want to take this company. And you have to be able to get those skill sets around you. So are you born with it? I think you know, as a parent, the first thing I wanted with my children is for them to have self-esteem. And I think if you don't have that self-esteem, it's gonna run you the wrong way. So to get self-esteem, you have to be able to work with people, and you have to be able to get your skill sets that will help you and give you the confidence to take those next steps. And that's why I always said, you know, the university business education for me was extremely important, because it gave me the skill sets that you know, I could analytically analyze a company, analyze, like, you know, the whole industry and kind of provide direction. Obviously, I didn't do that by myself. I did that with my team. But at least I was confident enough in the skill set that I could use it to help the team move forward. And just that's leadership.
My name is Lee. Thank you for being so gracious. I was just wondering, how do you let go? You were saying of letting go of your stress. I'm just wondering, how do you let go?
I shouldn't be promoting a glass of wine, but you know what? It's a bit of an attitude too. At some point, you just have to agree that you've done the best you can and take the time to take a walk. You know, there's no magic formula. Probably the worst thing you can do is bring home the human elements. Like, you know, sometimes you have to forget. If somebody tells you something that's, you know, didn't go over very well, you can't take it emotionally. You just got to keep focused on where you want to go. And you know what? In time, you will kind of weed out those people that aren't your supporters and just focus on the ones that are. So, you know, I know it's easier said than done, but you can't get emotional and let things get to you. You got to just keep focusing on where you want to go or where you want that business to go and not let the little things get to you. No? Work on the bigger picture. Does that make sense?
Hello, I am Brigitte Thomas. I'm a good friend of Madeleine, and maybe I can help answer that question. So what I've learned over the years from Madeleine really very much is that her ability to let go is always to be present. She's as present with her children as she would be in her work. I have never seen her in action in her direct work on a day-to-day basis, but with her friends, with everybody. So when she's invested in you, she will be with you. So maybe that enables her to be leaving behind other aspects of her life or other elements of her life, always knowing what's important and what she needs to get back to. But I've seen her in action, and I've learned quite a bit from Madeleine about that, to be present and to be invested in what you're doing when you decide to do it, and when she decides to be with friends, when she decides to be with a customer, when she decides she's very invested in that moment, in that present. So I think that might be a way you let go. Maybe that's a way you let go.
So not so much multitasking as compartmentalizing, really, right? Is that?
You know what? You don't think about these things. You just do it, I guess, you know.
I don't want to stop it if there are other questions.
Can we take one more?
Yeah.
Yep.
Bonjour, mon nom est Sabia Chiquan. Merci pour la présentation. Si quelqu'un voulait éventuellement siéger sur plusieurs conseils d'administration comme vous le faites, est-ce que vous avez des conseils ou est-ce qu'on peut seulement faire notre carrière, attendre et espérer qu'une organisation nous offre un poste sur un conseil comme ça?
Bien, premièrement, je siège juste sur des conseils qui sont affiliés à ma business aujourd'hui. Alors, j'ai appris que c'est très exigeant des conseils et il faut avoir le temps pour être capable de bien les réussir. Le conseil que je donnerais, c'est d'essayer plutôt de débuter avec des plus petits conseils de fondation, et se faire connaître parmi les gens autour de la table. Mais il faut travailler, il faut contribuer, il faut être reconnu pour avoir contribué à ce à quoi on est dévoué. Alors, autre que ça, c'est certain que si on est rendu à un certain niveau dans notre carrière, il y a toujours les cours qui se donnent pour être un administrateur. Je connais beaucoup d'administrateurs qui sont vraiment des spécialistes en être administrateur. Moi, je ne l'ai jamais été. Là. Moi, j'ai toujours été plus l'entrepreneur alentour de la table. Alors, il faut savoir qui on est aussi. Mais c'est certain qu'il y a des outils qui peuvent s'apprendre. Et je dirais que, tu sais, évidemment, le développement de la carrière de l'individu joue un rôle très important pour parce que c'est ça, en fait, qui vend les candidats. Alors, faut continuer à travailler fort, avoir des succès, le plus de succès possible et le plus d'outils dans notre bagage, les meilleures les chances vont être pour devenir sur les boards de grandes compagnies ou de petites compagnies.
Merci. Avant de remercier Madeleine et Marie, j'aimerais remercier les personnes qui ont organisé cet événement-là. It's the McGill Alumni Association who's responsible for organizing this, and I'd like to thank Honora Shaughnessy, who's just retired as the Senior Executive Director of the McGill Alumni Association, who has done a wonderful job. Lynn Marks, who's in the back, who took over from Wendy Schilling, who started to help organize this event. And our token man from the MAA, Alan Denoyer, who's just been named the president of the McGill Alumni, succeeding a series of women, if I remember correctly, who just took over at our last annual general meeting. So many thanks to McGill and the McGill Alumni Association, because without them, all of the events that I talked to you about in New York, in Calgary, and in Toronto, here in Montreal, would not be feasible. Alors, mais maintenant, là, c'est le temps de remercier Madeleine. Merci infiniment pour toutes les leçons de vie. Moi, ce que j'ai retenu le plus, c'est qu'il faut avoir confiance en soi, puis pas toujours se demander est-ce que si on est une femme, est-ce qu'on va avoir moins de succès, etc. Puis moi, je crois beaucoup là-dedans. Je pense que on peut toujours, comme femme, se dire, oh, ben, je l'ai pas eu parce que je suis une femme, mais si on est un homme, on peut jamais se dire ça. Alors, il faut pas se servir de cette excuse-là. Et puis, j'aimerais aussi remercier Marie, ce qui a fait un travail de nous apprendre à mieux connaître Madeleine. Et puis, j'ai deux petit cadeau pour vous autres.
Merci.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci, Madeleine.
And I'd like to thank all of you for your questions, for your participation, for your attention. And we have three prix de présence. I don't know how you say that in English. So I will draw. Merci, Chelsea. Chelsea also works in the MA. Very helpful, because I'm not going to look. I'll pick three. Okay, so I would like to ask Joyce Cornfield-Mazur, who is to come up, and then Claire Boulanger from New Look, La Lunetterie, et Amandine Michaud de Kruger de venir chercher leur prix de présence. So, as I said to you at the beginning, we want to hold more of these events, and we're going to send you a survey to see what you appreciated, what you think you'd like to see, what you'd like to improve, and we will also make sure that you get the link to be LinkedIn. Et finalement, je pense qu'il n'y a personne qui est allé chercher les desserts encore. Alors, on a la salle réservée encore pour un petit moment. Je vous invite à rester ici et à toutes et à tous. Je vous souhaite un bon après-midi, une belle fin de semaine, mais surtout un super bel été. Merci beaucoup d'être venus.